Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Erica Wise, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America. I'm back. I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid, lifelong hunter. And you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on Heritage Radio Network. So I was gone. I think I missed 2 weeks. Memorial Day weekend hit, and then I flew off to Chicago, and I spent some time at the Siebel Institute of Technology on Goose Island in Chicago, studying craft distillation. So when the apocalypse hits, now I could hunt, I can make booze, I know how to kill zombies. So I am now the complete package as far as I'm concerned. No, but it was a great class, excellent, top-notch school. I thought I knew a lot about fermentation. I thought I knew a lot about the distillation process, and it was frightening. The first 2 or 3 days, I was fried. I really couldn't keep up. I was the guy in class raising my hand, you know, every 10 minutes saying, but you said this before. And then the guy would say, yeah, but I also said this. And it was really, really cool. You know, it was a lot of the instructors, our chemical engineers graduated from West Point, their chemical engineering program. So I kind of had a kinship with some of them as far as the Army thing. And it was really cool just to hear these guys, these master distillers, really, you know, talk about the science of what distillation or, you know, the production of alcohol really is. And then break it down to just basic hillbilly know-how. It was a great group of people. We had 26 people in the class, and, you know, we represented, you know, just about, you know, everywhere from the East Coast to the West Coast, up north, down south. It was a really cool group of people. A lot of beer brewers, a lot of master brewery guys, a lot of down south guys talking hunting and Army stuff with them. So I had a ball. And it was funny because one of the subjects that came up on the side during lunch was what we call the dog hunting debate. And at first, as a Yankee, I was sitting there with these Southern boys talking a little hunting. And then they brought up what they call, again, the dog hunting debate. And as they were talking, I didn't jump in because I didn't know exactly what they were talking about yet. And then as they were talking, I figured out real quickly they weren't talking about bird hunting or using your dog to retrieve a duck or even a flush dog or a pointer, you know, to drive a bird into the air. They were talking about using dogs for deer hunting. And when they say, you know, dog hunting, that's what they're referring to. They're not talking about going out and hunting birds. They're talking about hunting deer with dogs. And then, you know, I perked up and I said, wow, I want to hear about this. This is cool, you know? And then I remembered back. I said, you know, as I was talking to these guys, I remembered back. I had read a book years ago that my father had given me. And it was written, and I have the book here in my hands right now. I'm going to read a paragraph from it in a second. And it's called "Those Were the Days" by Archibald Rutledge. And if you've never heard of this guy, you should have, and you should read him. You know, old time hunting stories. He wrote a lot of short stories about his love of hunting. He was a down south guy who kind of came up north early in his life. you know, was an educator, was in Washington, D.C., settled into Pennsylvania, and just had a beautiful way of explaining even the most, or writing about the most simple hunts the guy went on. And the book's a complete pleasure. So if you get a chance, again, Those Were the Days, Archibald Rutledge. I'm looking at the price tag on this. It was $3 my father found it for at a garage sale. So maybe you can find it out there. But anyhow, the debate, the deer hunting dog debate, is a big deal, really, down south. So I started looking into it. Well, even when I was down in Chicago, you know, that night I got back to the hotel room and had a little dinner and sat down and started just kind of Googling this. And really, this whole debate creates a lot of animosity, first of all, between the North and the South, hunters in the North and hunters. And it's not even hunters, not just hunters, even the public. Anti-hunters are really, they latch on to this dog hunting tradition. And it really has caused a lot of animosity between the two regions in some ways. And even down south, where this is, I guess, a relatively popular undertaking, there's two camps, man. There's those traditionalists who like to use dogs. And then they may archery hunt, and they may just, you know, rifle and use their muzzle loaders and do the traditional, you know, stand hunting and stuff like that. But, you know, they always break out and do these traditional deer hunts, dog hunts every year. And it really, even down south, some of the more mainstream hunters are against this. So we're going to talk about that today. I found a lot of interesting facts about it. And, you know, the long history of it is amazing alone. You know, according to archaeologists, historians, man has used domesticated dogs, canines, to hunt wild game. Going back, you know, at least 15,000 years now. When, you know, we got to go back to an old show, I don't even know what we called it, but, you know, when European settlers reached here, you know, reached North America in what, 1600s, they brought their hunting dogs and they brought their traditions with them. You know, an interesting sidebar, experts believe that the first authentic pack of hunting dogs in the colonies, North American colonies, was established by a man named Robert Brooke of Maryland in 1650. And he's an interesting dude, too. I kind of found some stuff on him, but that's a different show. But hunting with dogs in early North America represented a real kind of cultural shift away from the European style of hunting. It was, you know, another form of freedom found by people coming to North America. As you know from my past show I did on this, for centuries in Europe, forever in Europe, hunting wild game was a diversion, I guess, a hobby only available to the very rich and powerful. Game animals on the land traditionally belonged to royalty. And that was it, bottom line. If you were a peasant and you got caught shooting one of the king's deer, oh man, they'd probably hang you. They'd kill you dead. They'd cut your head off. That was no jokes. That was the property of the king, all the wild game. So when the peasants came over here, they were like, what? We could just go out there and kill animals? I love this. I love this freedom. So in the colonies and later in, you know, the United States, when we finally established it, wild game belonged first to all free white men, white males. If you were a white female or anything other than a white male, you could not shoot wild game. And that kind of carried over from Europe, you know. And that was regardless of wealth, social class, didn't matter. And, you know, obviously, unfortunately, women and people of color had no rights to these animals. Luckily, in the greatness of this country, that was eventually fixed. And the what do you want to call it, the influx of the Scottish Irish immigrants coming to America in the mid to 1700s really brought in the idea, the specific idea of using specifically or specialty trained dogs to hunt deer. And it started down south. They call them, you know, the so-called Virginia deer. In Kentucky, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, obviously Virginia. And that's really, back then even, is when the controversy began. Everyone was like, wow, what the hell are you guys doing? Oh, these Irish, they come over here. The Scots, they come over here. They don't know how to behave. Great distillers, by the way. We had one of my instructors, Scottish guy, funny as hell too. He couldn't throw in enough jabs at Irish whiskey producers. Very funny guy. But so this idea that there were two groups, the traditionalists almost, who went out and stalked their animal all by their big selves, and then these what do you want to call them? These crazy maniacs who came out with just packs of hounds and released them out into the woods onto the deer was a brewing problem as far back as 1700. So eventually in Virginia, the House of Representatives in Virginia passed a law that required the owners of deer dogs to keep their animals confined and under control until they were actually involved in the deer hunt. So I guess they thought that would solve the problem. You know, we'll keep these dogs under control until the hunt. The hunt will go quick, and everyone will be happy. Didn't really solve the problem, and we'll talk about specifically what some of the problems or perceived problems are of this kind of hunting. So then, in 1876, the North got involved. Wisconsin became the first state to ban dog hunting altogether. Then New York followed suit. The Adirondack Deer Law of 1888 imposed tight restrictions on dog hunting in New York. And really by the 20s, I believe it was, all of the northeastern states had actually outlawed dog hunting for deer altogether. But guess what? Those rebels down south, they held true. You know, they were like, nah, we're not going to let the North tell us again what to do. So dog hunting in the deep south stayed as a proud tradition. And then going back to this book for a second, I just want to read the first paragraph. And it's and this will kind of give you an idea of where the passion for this kind of hunting comes from. Wildwood fragrances, roaring fires, light woods crackling under a massive live oak backlog, festive boards and beautiful carols, all in the inviting scene of sound of gunfire, hunting horns, and barking dogs. And you'll have the picture of a Christmas day at Archibald Rutledge's Hampton Hunts. The Christmas Day deer hunt was a religious rite and a celebratory event in and of itself, one set in history of American white-tailed deer hunting. In keeping with an old English custom, instead of going to church on Christmas morning, Flintlock, as he was known, and his boys went deer hunting. In A Christmas Hunt, Flintlock makes the case for the custom. Quaintly and very humanly, the chief business on Christmas Day on an old southern plantation is not going to church. I know, hard to believe. While the women naturally think religion should come first, they do not greatly understand why their husbands, brothers, and lovers, like the attractively boyish barbarian men that they are, decide to take to the woods, use their dogs, and hunt down deer. So just reading that passage for me wants me to participate in it. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't got to go to church on Christmas. My wife can't drag me there. I'm going hunting with dogs one day before I die down south on Christmas. That's on my bucket list. But obviously a great passion for this kind of hunting down south. And as many deer hunters know, or southern deer hunters know, dog hunting can be really, really, really effective. It could be a great way of getting those deer moving during the lulls in their fall cycle. So by the 1900, you got to think, you know, early 1900s, white-tailed deer numbers were at an all-time low in this country. And, you know, again, going back to a past show, thanks to conservation efforts, this wildly ever resilient white-tailed deer made its dramatic recovery. And now, you know, we're estimating, you know, if you just look at down south, you know, we're talking about 45 million deer, give or take. So there's plenty of deer for everyone to get along and kind of participate in whatever legal activities they want for hunting. And today, you know, in modern day, 11 states, and that's it, still allow deer hunting with dogs. Two of the states, funny enough, California and Hawaii, have no white-tailed deer populations. And the whatever their state game management officials are called, tightly control the use of dogs to hunt the indigenous deer they have there, which are probably, I know, mule deer, probably some axis, definitely black-tailed deer. So it's highly restricted. So really the last place to really, really get down, get your dogs, go down south is the old Confederacy states, you know, those rebels down there, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. It is still legal there. Another former rebel state, Texas, they allowed dog hunting until sometime in the 1990s. And it was banned. They got a flood of complaints from landowners and non-hunters. And so Texas broke and outlawed it altogether. And Texas has really a white-tailed deer problem. I mean, in parts of Texas, they are definitely overpopulated, so it didn't help their cause as far as conservation is concerned. But deer hunters, you know, in general, who believe their, I don't know what you would call it, sport, their hobby, their undertaking is under attack, maybe, I guess, surprised and maybe happy to learn that the country as a whole still supports the preservation of our hunting tradition in general. 78% of Americans approve of hunting in general, you know, hunting for wild game. Unfortunately for you Southern boys who do this kind of hunting, that same poll showed the support for dog hunting is at an dangerously low, ridiculous number. No one supports it. And again, I don't want to tip my hat yet, but I don't understand why. The property thing we're going to talk about in a second. So what I want to talk about in the second half of the show is kind of breaking it down by state. Talk a little bit about the outline of regulations and where these states are currently with, you know, the legality of dog deer hunting and, you know, the future prospects for this beautiful, in my opinion, that I just tipped my hat, tradition or this method of using dogs to hunt deer down south. And with that, let's take a short break here. You are listening to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk.
Life is what they say. Sun and rain. White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and let's get back to it. All right, so dog hunting. For deer. First of all, why don't we just start here before we start breaking down regulation, where I stand. I already tipped my hat. I'm not against it. I don't see the real problem here. Some of the stuff I read was, you know, it's basically trespassing complaints more than anything. You know, these big clubs down south, you know, they own a lot of property. Most of them, I would assume, and even smaller plots of land, I guess, you know, little smaller hunting clubs and individuals own or lease, you know, border each other. And I guess the complaint comes from the idea that if you're releasing 20 dogs onto your property and letting them run around, how do you restrict them? I would argue, you know, I've seen dogs being trained for bear hunting upstate New York and other things. Electronic collars would be a great way to go. There's a million ways to control it. I would never advocate trespassing on anybody's land for any reason, never mind hunting. But, you know, it seems like an easily fixable problem. So, you know, most of the complaints I've been reading about were, you know, these dogs run, they create a racket, they throw off the general traits of the deer on my property, or they drive deer off my property and the dogs trespass onto the property. The way I compare it, and maybe I'm wrong again, I've never seen or been involved in one of these dog deer hunts, but it's, to me, the same as a deer drive using humans. You know, two-thirds of your club go to the north end of your property. One-third of your club gets in line down south on your property, and they start in a line walking across your property, breaking branches, screaming, yelling to drive the deer towards the standers who are going to shoot them. And basically, instead of using humans, these guys have trained dogs to actually run the properties, kicking up deer who would normally bed and stay put and not move until, you know, their preferred times of movement. So that's why, and maybe I'm simplifying it, you know, if you're from down south and you have a problem with this, email me. Let me know I'm wrong. I really don't see where the real problem, outside of the trespassing issues, which should be fixed, I don't really have a problem with this method. It's as humane as a human deer drive, as far as I'm concerned. So if you're against dog drives or dog hunts, you got to be against humans clomping through the woods, breaking branches, and making noise trying to drive deer. So just to go through some of the states here, Alabama, dog hunting rights have just started to erode in that state. They're close to being done with it. They have 67 counties in the state, and 35 have completely or partially banned the act of dog hunting. You can't do it on state land. You can't do it on federal land in Alabama. The clubs that do it in the counties where it's been outlawed are placed on probation, or they have their dog hunting permits revoked, you know, by the whatever the Alabama Department of Conservation is. For simple violations of the hunting regulations. So you could lose your license if you get caught in a restricted area using a dog to hunt deer. the Department of Conservation down there cites a number of public complaints about excessive use of dogs, dogs fighting, dogs being a danger to the other hunters in the woods, things of this nature. You know, and the sad part about it really is, you know, I think there's got to be, as a libertarian, there's got to be some kind of agreement struck where people could do it. You know, it's not unethical. It's not hurting anybody outside of trespassing, really, you know. And you read some of these guys who grew up with it, or, you know, these old timers down south who just kind of grew up doing it, and they want to pass that tradition on to their family, to their sons and their grandkids. And I understand, you know, that's something I want to pass this tradition of hunting on to my children. You know, and their thinking is our forefathers set this up and made it a technique and a way of doing it, of hunting that we've held true to for hundreds of years. And they don't want to see it go away. And you know, I respect that. Some of the other states, Florida still allows some dog hunting, throughout much of the state. It's highly regulated. There's a mandatory registration for deer hunting dogs, and you got to register the parcel of land where it's going to happen. And basically this permit that they issue, are only issued to private landowners and deer hunting clubs with enough, property and whatever that amount is. You know, I'm sure it's a certain amount of acres. You got to have 50 acres to undertake this kind of hunting. The funny part about Florida is no registration is required to hunt deer with dogs on public land. So, you know, you could go to those huge sprawling national forests down in Florida, and you can let your dogs run crazy. Deer dog collars are required. You got to have a registration number on the collar. And you must have a permit, but there's no real restriction on doing it on you know, really public land in Florida, which it sounds mixed up to me. I think they should take this on and try to figure it out. Georgia, really one of the places that started this whole tradition, you know, and they have something down in Georgia called and the Southern Dog Hunting Controversy, I guess. You know, the whole thing that's happening kind of centers in Georgia in a lot of ways, and they have something called they're calling the Georgia model, and they're looking at it as an overall solution for the problem. So prior to, I think it was 2002, 2003, confrontations between dog hunters and landowners had reached an all-time high. As many as 10 counties representing 25% of the state's dog hunting land, were prepared to ban dog hunting outright. They weren't going to allow it anymore. Luckily, the Georgia Dog Hunters Association, who knew, demonstrated their power, or their political savvy, I guess, by brokering a deal with the state legislature that would preserve dog hunting by making it a subject to new regulations, so new restrictions put on it. They knew they were going to lose it. They said, "All right, let's pass some laws to restrict it." So, in the same year, they introduced a bunch of laws that again could work for everyone. Landowners who want to hunt deer with dogs on their property are required to obtain a permit from the Georgia Wildlife Resource Division. The permitted property must consist of at least 1,000 continuous acres. And then later, when I read that, I was like, wow, man, these guys down south are hunting big, big properties. They later reduced that to 250 continuous acres, which seems like a more manageable number for the regular guy hunting. All dogs and vehicles used to hunt deer on permitted property must be identified with a permit number. So, you know, there's the answer. It's got to be by how many acres you have, how many dogs you're using, and you got to get a permit. To me, that's the answer to kind of save this beautiful tradition of deer hunting. You know, hunting birds with dogs, if you've ever done it, is just, you know, an unbelievable undertaking to watch the dogs work and their love of their work and what they do. And I'm sure these deer dogs have the same love that a good duck dog would have. You know, my old dog couldn't wait to get out in the car. And he knew, man, when he saw that shotgun coming out, he knew it was time to go. He could sense the season and my kind of excitement, you know, and he couldn't contain himself. He would, if I didn't have the door open, he would have broke through to get into my truck to get outside. But I get it. I'm a libertarian. So if you're against it, God bless America. Good luck. Email me. Let me know what you think about this. Again, I support it. I think it's a wonderful thing. And that book, again, you got to read it. If you're a hunter or a listener of my show and you have not read this book, you're wrong. So find it somewhere. Google it. Those Were the Days, Archibald Rutledge. It's simply a series of his short stories and, you know, one or two of the stories about the tradition of these dog hunts down south growing up on a plantation are really interesting, just the kind of way of life these guys had. And we're talking about, you know, early 1900s down there, down south, these old plantations, you know, still family owned in ways, you know, from back when we had slavery. And so, you know, in some of the stories, the author talks about black people who worked on the plantation still, obviously paying jobs, but kind of their plight and how hard their lives were down south, and how he, I guess, as in his mind, as a progressive in the early 1900s, you know, was not a racist, hadn't, you know, saw black people as equals and would include them in his holiday hunts. And that some of the stories talk about how that pissed off some of the neighboring plantations. And he would allow black people living on his plantation to hunt deer and turkey and wild game. And so it's historic. It's really interesting culturally to read about it, what was going on down south and how it all tied in with hunting in some way. All right. There we go. I'm back. That was quick. Went quick. Oh, let me just talk about Chicago for a second, New York. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Again. All right? Listen, the black, you want to wear black clothes all the time, subdued colors. I could live with that. I have a baby blue shirt on today, I'll have you know, and some kind of weird purpley blue hat on. I'm practically walking around like a clown today with yellow. I got everything going on.
It's Hofstra pride.
Thank you. Thank you, Jack. And so I was messing with you on that one, but we got to start cleaning up around here. I was just in Chicago, downtown Chicago, and I walked to my class. So 2.5 miles every morning and back from my class. And I took a different route so I could see a different neighborhood and a different part of Chicago. And I got to tell you, what a beautiful city. And I'm the first one bad-mouthing every other city. New York's the center of everything, right? Bad-mouth Philadelphia, bad-mouth L.A., bad-mouth all of these cities. But Chicago, I'm not going to bad-mouth you anymore. Beautiful, clean, friendly, wonderful city. People are polite. People are nice to each other. People smiled at me. What the fuck? I was walking that first day. I was like, is my zipper open? I kept looking. I'm like, am I doing something stupid? I stopped and looked in the window of a store to make sure I didn't have something on my face. Like four people, pretty girls, just smiled at me. And I'm not that guy. You know, I'm not walking down the street having pretty girls. Like, people are just friendly there. And I got to tell you, when I got off the L train here in Brooklyn, I looked at the sidewalk and there's trash, cigarette butts, disgustingness, all of it. Pick up what's in front of you. In Chicago, I couldn't find a gum wrapper blowing in the wind. A really, really beautiful city. If you've never been there, and the food scene's awesome. They got brew pubs popping up left and right. They got craft distilleries popping up left and right. And it's a really, really cool city. I had a great time. So congratulations, Chicago. You're on my list. But that's all the time we have. Thank you for listening to the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth. And thank you for listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And remember, if you kill it, you better eat it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.